Hello and welcome to Idaho Senator Larry Craig's Pod Chat for February 2006. Today is February 27th of 2006. I'm Dan Whiting and I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C. with Senator Larry Craig. For those of you who are wondering what a Pod Chat is, it's a combination between an online chat and a podcast. It allows Idahoans to ask questions directly to Senator Craig and for them to hear his answers in his own voice. Subscribers to Senator Craig's biweekly newsletter, e-news, and visitors to his website were invited to ask questions submitted through the website. And if you'd like to submit a question for a future pod chat, just go to craig.senate.gov/podchat. With that, Larry, let's get straight to some questions from Idahoans. The first one comes from Patricia. She's from Priest River, and she's opposed to the National Animal Identification Plan and wants to know what your position is on this proposal. So why don't you take a moment, explain what that is and where you're coming from.
Sure. Well, Dan, thank you very much, and let me thank the questioner for her interest in animal ID. Over the last good number of years, there's been a very healthy debate inside the livestock industry as it relates to ID, both country of origin labeling and now with the incident of the mad cow disease, the ability to identify an animal and where they came from and their health records. There have been a variety of versions as to how you do that, but finally, in legislation and in the Farm Bill several years ago, there was a direct proposal. That got modified into USDA working with the livestock industry to try to design and develop some voluntary way to establish an ID system so you can track an animal. Frankly, for the sake of the industry itself, and the strength of its market, being able to do that, I think, is tremendously important. Now, I used to be in the cattle industry, and at the same time, I know that that can be somewhat difficult to do. Out in the West, where we use actual brands on our livestock, and sometimes earmarks and ear IDs, it is a little less difficult. What I learned over the years is that, you know, east of the Mississippi River, an awful lot of cattle are raised, and some of them are not ID'd at all. They have no brand, no earmark, no form of identification. They're simply raised behind fences and rounded up and taken to slaughter, and there's no way to track them. I know that individuals are concerned about what this will do and how much it will cost the individual operators. So that's why it has been a voluntary effort to date between USDA and the livestock industry. I think in the end, being able to establish and sustain health records is going to be awfully important. Some form of record. If it hadn't have been for records on artificial insemination, we would never have found where that animal in Canada that created all the controversy in Idaho was from. We were able to find that through breeding records. And so records of livestock, whether they're health records or ID records, are probably a wave of the future. The question is, how usable do you make them?
Great. Well, thanks for that clarification. Bob from Nampa is in the trucking business and is concerned about the hours of service regulations for truckers. They went into effect 2 years ago. A judge put a halt on them. Now there's some new ones out there. He doesn't believe they're reasonable and would like to see you overturn them. And where are you on this issue?
Well, in April of 2003, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration issued these revisions in hours of service regulations. I think all of us are legitimately concerned about a trucker that gets on the road, and because he's independent and isn't controlled by a trucking firm as it relates to hours, and we've seen cases of log books being manipulated so they can drive 24 hours and maybe take a stimulant to keep on driving. Are they safe on the road? In some instances, they are not. And in several instances, they've caused catastrophic accidents. So because trucks on the road are a regulated form of transportation, that's why the administration proposed a set of regulations. And this organization estimated that these new regulations would potentially save lives and prevent some 1,300 fatigue-related accidents per year. Whether that's true or not, the reality is there was a problem out there. Dan, who just asked me the question, is absolutely right. Those regs didn't meet the test. Many of us argued early on that the regs were arbitrary and capricious. It was tested in the U.S. Court of Appeals here in the District of Columbia, and they were held back and rewritten. these are a better version of what we've seen in the past. I don't know if they're the best version. What I would hope, now that they are implemented, is that truckers would let us know exactly what they're finding out, if this is a manageable tool or not. Can I stop them or pull them back at this moment? It would take a vote of the U.S. Congress to do so, because they are now an established regulation. We've already argued it before and got them pulled back back in 2004. So I would hope that as we move forward on this, if you don't think they're working, let us know. Obviously, the person who has asked the question has a legitimate concern. And in Idaho, whether you've got an over-the-road driver, meaning traveling from state to state to state, or somebody who's simply driving from the farm to the beet dump or to some other location, or from the farm to the sale ring, that's a whole different set of regulations or standards. If it's a private carrier versus a public carrier, another set of standards. And if there's a concern here, I need to know about it, and I need to know about it in as much detail as you can offer. Thank you.
Great. And you raise a great point about Bob letting us know about this. And of course, if there's other folks that are concerned about it, they can go to your website, they can send you a message, they can call one of your offices in Idaho and give input from the truckers on the ground. So, well, Kristen from Idaho Falls is interested in funding levels, government programs to help the poor. Obviously, that's a broad statement, but she's concerned about these cuts and wants to know where you stand. So why don't you give us an overview of the budget?
Sure.
Where things are.
Well, to the questioner, budgets are tight everywhere. As you know, we're running a very large deficit, and the Congress is working awfully hard at this moment to get that deficit under control. And we're squeezing all of the budgets by a substantial amount. Those that are, quote, not entitled budgets. By that I mean Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and many of the programs that identify, as you say, for the poor are outside of those entitled areas, although some are inside the entitled areas. Certainly Medicare, prescription drugs, and all of those have not been cut. They're at full funding and growing. So there is benefit out there depending on your given qualification. We've just started the budget process. The president has proposed a budget that has generally cuts in it all over the place. Most of those cuts are not cuts. They are simply a reduction in the rate of growth in the expenditure. Now, some would call them cuts. Most of them are at last year's levels. Some of them slightly below. I can't predict for you what the end budget will look like. I'm going to take a look at every one of these issues. We're going to do all we can for the poor. At the same time, I have an obligation to be fiscally tight and responsible, to keep this budget in line and to try to bring that deficit down. And we'll have to do that in combination with all the programs we're talking about. But thank you very much for bringing this issue to my attention. We'll watch it very closely as we work through the budget.
Great. And Kristen has a second part of her question. It's regarding illegal immigration. You know, her concern is that illegal immigrants are draining these programs, taking benefits away from U.S. citizens. Can you touch a moment? I know illegal immigration and that debate's coming up in the Senate this very week. You've been involved in it a long time. You know, what do you see happening? Where are you coming from? What are your solutions?
Well, we are going to deal with illegal immigration. In fact, we're right in the midst of writing a major immigration reform law. We've invested now on the average of about $3.5 billion annually, new money in our borders to control our borders. And that's starting to happen. And so controlling borders, getting local law enforcement the resources to deal with illegals, along with a law that recognizes the need for guest workers in certain segments of our economy is important. Are they, quote, draining the money of the of poor programs? Only at the emergency room does an illegal have access to health care. And only at the time of an emergency might they come to the emergency door of a local hospital. Beyond that, by definition, they are not eligible and in most instances gain no access to many of these programs. If you're illegal, you can't gain food stamps. You've got to show your ID. You've got to have a legal Social Security card. And a check of that, in most instances, would find they were illegal. So there are checks in place, and we're working to tighten those down. Those may be a part of immigration policy reform. But clearly America is now focused on this issue. We're doing all we can to get it under control.
Perfect. Well, Jay from Pocatello is also talking about a budget issue with Social Security. And obviously we're all familiar with Social Security. We've all heard about the debate over the need for reform. He wants to know specifically, why do we need to reform it? And his contention is that if, quote, Congress pays back all that was spent throughout the years for Pork Barrel, there would not be a problem with Social Security. So can you take a moment, outline the problem as you see it, and talk more about the earmarking process?
Well, I can, and it is important that I think anyone listening to the debate over Social Security, first and foremost, understand how it is operated and run. Social Security is a trust fund system in which money is paid in and money is paid out. The money is held by the government, and the government loans the money out to different agencies of the government through the general fund budget for other purposes, and those agencies pay it back. There is no evidence in the history of Social Security since it was created in the 30s that government borrowed money and didn't pay it back. It always has. So all of the money that was intended for Social Security is in Social Security today. That isn't the problem. The problem is there are 70 million Americans called baby boomers that were a large block of young people immediately after World War II when all of our GIs came home married and had babies, about ready to hit the Social Security market. They're all at 62, 63, 64, 65 years of age. So that's first and foremost the biggest problem. The next biggest problem, instead of five people working for everybody who's getting a Social Security check and therefore paying in, there are now only, I think, 2.3 people working. And that's even going to decline as this large volume of baby boomers hits Social Security eligibility. So what's happening? Not enough money flowing into the system for the amount flowing out of the system. Will the system go broke? No, it won't go broke. At about 2030, there won't be enough money to honor current levels of services, but there'll still be a very big chunk of money flowing in on an annual basis. So what do you do? Start cutting back the amount of services and or checks in Social Security? Or do you change the system in a way that without just raising taxes on the working men and women, offset this and balance it and allow continued payment? That's really the debate we're into at this moment. Lastly, for somebody who's 60 years of age today or 80 years of age today, Social Security has been a tremendously valuable asset. There's no question about it. And they're going to get back from it either the same money they paid in or a lot more money than they ever paid in. But for a young 20-year-old that's hitting the workforce today, by the time they're 60, probably by the time they're 70, we won't let them have Social Security until they're 70 if they're only 20 years of age today, my guess is. That's part of the reform that we'll look at. They're going to pay in a lot of money, and I doubt that they'll get back 50% of what they paid in, simply because they're going to be taxed higher than the rate of return for the purpose of funding this large block of citizens about to hit Social Security. Is it complicated? Yes. Can it be solved? Yes, it can be. We're all going to have to be a bit broad-minded about it and understand the need for it. It's a very valuable program. And the records, the accounting records, clearly show that every dime borrowed from the trust fund has been paid back. It's just that there's now not enough in the trust fund and too few working in relation to those that will receive the benefit.
Well, thank you, Larry. Jay's question touched on another hot topic these days in Congress, and that's earmarking and the appropriations process. And you've served on the Appropriations Committee here in the Senate since 1997. Mike Simpson, the representative from Idaho's congressional district, serves on the Appropriations Committee in the House. Can you talk just for a moment to Idahoans, explain the process,
sure,
and explain how things work and your criteria for considering an earmark in Congress?
Earmark, or the term earmarking, by the press has been portrayed as a bad act. Let me shine a slightly different light on it. First of all, they have said, well, if you quit earmarking, you'll control the budget and you'll spend less. That is simply false. No earmarking is done until a total budget is proposed and appropriated. Others have said, well, anything beyond what the president proposed is fat and shouldn't be done. Well, constitutionally, the president has no responsibility with budgeting. In 1928, we said the president had to submit a budget, and in 1973, we said you got to submit a detailed budget. Constitutionally, it is not his job or his responsibility. Budgets rest entirely with the Congress of the United States because of our Constitution. So what is an earmark? An earmark is to allow individual states and their delegations to choose certain activities done within their states and for that purpose. Let's take Idaho, for example, or let's take Idaho State University. Let's say Idaho State University was competing with Harvard and any other big university on the East Coast for money from Department of Energy or from Health and Human Services. And it was the Eastern bureaucrat in those agencies that were determining where the money went. You think any money would get to Idaho State? I doubt that very much. So what earmarking allows is for the Idaho congressional delegation to take a very limited amount of money and look at priority needs within the state and say these are the needs and these are where we're going to spend, these are the areas in which we're going to spend money. Congressman Mike Simpson and I, as members of the Appropriations Committee in the House and the Senate, work with the entire delegation. And during the months of January and February, we tell all Idahoans to send in their particular proposals as to what are needed. Our universities, our counties and cities and the state and agencies and even private individuals. And we look at all of these and prioritize what we think is important for Idaho or maybe what's time sensitive. Maybe there's a tremendous need for some water treatment in a given area because you've got a water treatment facility that's failing and the city can simply not afford to go there, and you up that proposal on a list of priorities. And then we only allocate not an awful lot of money, but we get these proposals for Idaho, and they're earmarked. That's an earmark. Then we put them up on our website so all of Idaho can see what we've done, because we want it to be open and transparent. I don't want earmark to be a bad word. I want it to be understood as the ability of a state delegation to allocate some of the resources of government to their state instead of letting a bureaucracy make that decision, and then to suggest that the bureaucracy has no bias is really not to deal with the truth. So I don't think it's a bad word, but I think it needs to be understood and defined, and it certainly needs to be open and public and very transparent.
Well, great. Just right at the end here, we're going to just two more issues that are at the forefront of people's minds right now and I think are important for you to address. One is this port issue and the Dubai company that's won a contract to manage those ports. Can you talk about what's going on and where you see things going?
Just as we are recording these responses, the company or the country of Dubai and the company of Dubai that bought the company that manages the ports has said they'll back off for 45 days while Congress takes a look at it. And I'm glad that's happening. Congress clearly needs to take a look at this. It needs to be a very open, transparent process. The public needs to know because there is a very real concern about security. And I think there's an anxiousness out there as to what in the heck's going on and why does this foreign country have the right to manage one of our ports. Some have even used the word own a port. Well, you don't own a port. The port and the port facilities are owned by a port authority, which is a taxing unit of government at the local level, the New York Port Authority, the Philadelphia Port Authority, the Baltimore Port Authority. The security, in most instances, is managed by the Harbor Patrol in the given area and the Coast Guard. But there's still this company owned by Dubai, which is a part of the Arab Emirate Group, United Arab Emirates, which is a small collection of countries down at the base of the Saudi Peninsula and off near the Indian Ocean. My goodness, they're Arabs. We're at war with Islamic fundamentalism, that shouldn't happen. Well, I don't know whether it's right or wrong yet until we get all of the facts involved. I was disappointed that the president said he would veto anything. Frankly, we're going to take the time to look at it and look at it very closely. Ports are an extremely important access point for our country. Tens of thousands of big containers, the size of the beds of 18-wheeled freight trucks, roll into these ports every day from all over the world, and they're not inspected. There is no physical way you could inspect any one of them individually and do them all. So we're attempting to develop technology to get just that done. Any of you been through an airport? No. You're going to be shook down at an airport. Your bags are going to be x-rayed. We're doing that in a post-9/11 environment. We have not got to our ports yet. It is simply too complicated. I want to know who's going to be looking at the x-ray screen when we develop the x-ray that this large container flows through. I want to make sure they've had a background check. I want to make sure that they are legal and that we can trust that if they find anything, it will be reported instead of being because of their interest, their politics, or their nationality, deciding they're going to become a conspirator. We simply can't risk that in our country, and that's why we're going to hold the hearings. That's why it's an important issue.
Great. One last item. Expected that the Patriot Act will be reauthorized this week in Congress. You've been a vocal opponent of some of the provisions and the way they were structured. Now you support it. What's changed?
The Patriot Act is in itself very important for our country. It was passed immediately following 9/11. It allowed what we call firewalls to be brought down so that our intelligence community and our law enforcement community could communicate and compare and relate findings and information. It also gave law enforcement very expanded authority to enter the domain of a citizen or a private citizen and his or her records, even their home, and to do so under certain circumstances. I felt that some of those circumstances were much too liberal, denying the private citizen certain rights under our Constitution. Well, I voted for the original Patriot Act, but I said I would watch it very closely, and we did. And as a result of that, we offered a series of amendments to change it, to strengthen it on behalf of the civil liberties of our citizens, while assuring the law enforcement community the right to do what they need to do to go after the bad guys. Those who supported me didn't get all we wanted in the first instance. About a month and a half ago, we started negotiating with the White House. We negotiated very thoroughly. We gained several more additional points, which I think strengthen the right of our citizen under the Constitution, while at the same time giving our law enforcement opportunities to go for the bad guys. With that, we are now debating a final version. We think it will be completed by the second, third week of March at the latest, that the Patriot Act will be reauthorized and in place. What is important to say that during and while this debate has been going on, we've still been living under the protection of Patriot. It isn't that it got stood down while we were debating it. Not at all. This is simply a reauthorization that adjusts the law that is currently in place, and when the new law comes in, the old law will be brought down, so that protection, law enforcement, and the right of the citizen will not have altered that much.
Well, thank you for that explanation. With that, we're out of time for this pod chat. For the questions we did not have time to answer, we may be able to cover them in the next pod chat, but in the meantime, we invite you to visit Senator Craig's website at craig.senate.gov. And through that, you can send him an email for a written response. You can ask another question for the next pod chat. Or you can read issue briefings on everything from adoption to veterans. So, and with that, thank you.